Local voices since 1963. This is CQW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg.
Mike and Chris, the two princes, like each other a lot. One day they decided they should give radio a shot. On CKUW
95.9 FM, Winnipeg, Manitoba.
We tell some jokes, inspire folks to truly harness in.
And if you haven't heard the show, well, where the heck you been?
Are you giving your 10%?
Hey, Jeanette, is it today? Where'd you go? It's coming up.
The best part of the show is that nobody's listening. So we can say most anything. Nobody's there.
Nobody cares. We're all gonna die
someday. This is our show and nobody's listening.
To say stuff now, I'm just gonna get picked up on a microphone.
Okay. Yeah, everybody talking.
Okay, perfect.
Perfect. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Two Princes on CKW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg, Manitoba. I am Chris.
I'm Micah.
And today's a very special episode because, as you know, when there's two of us, we're princes, but we get fully realized when we get a third person. I'll move over a little bit. So, Mike,
you're good.
You're perfect. I'm just not close enough to you. Trying to save you guys from my probable sweat smell. But we have a third person. Is it good? You like it?
Yeah.
Awesome.
Manly.
I've got a manly musk today. We have a friend here, and we are three kings today with Chris, Micah, and...
Bob Banks.
Oh, I thought you said Bob Ends.
No, not an Ends.
Thank God.
Yeah, no, we don't want any of those Endses on our shows.
Yeah. Split Ends.
Yeah. The Ends never justify their means.
They're very
always
mean.
So mean.
Yeah.
I've never met a nice Ends. That's not true. There's some nice Ends.
There are some Ends with one N.
Yeah.
Those are the ones to look out for.
Yeah.
Because they're more sleek with that lack of double N going on there.
Yeah.
And that's a whole other thing.
So if you're an Ends, we're on to you.
If you're, yeah. It sounds less Mennonite if it's one N.
Mm-hmm.
That gives them...
some leeway.
Yeah.
They don't have to pretend ever. Because, like, what is it with Mennonites always having to pretend to be nice? Do you know?
Well, it's what you're supposed to do.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's true to most Manitoba. Like, there's, like, a friendliness to it, but there's an edge just behind it.
Yeah.
That's the part that I think American visitors always don't really realize, because they're like, oh, you're so friendly. It's like, oh, we're so outwardly friendly. We're very outwardly hospitable. But then, you know... We talk shit
yeah.
a lot of the time.
Shit is so fun to talk.
Yeah.
There's no real point in talking if it's not shit.
But, yeah, so, like, we're friendly, but, you know, to a
point.
You're
going to make it really hard for me if you guys keep swearing.
I know. I accidentally dropped one. Sorry.
That's okay.
Did not mean to.
I'm going
to
start really.
Did you really mean that apology?
Yeah, I did. I didn't.
Okay. It just hurt.
Yeah.
He's very in on genuine apologies.
Oh, yeah. No, I meant it. I mean to start a waterfall. I knew once one came out, it was a problem.
Yeah. Sorry, talking feces.
Yeah.
Feces. So we are here today to talk about whatever we talk about on a Wednesday, on a Tuesday.
For all of you guys, we record this ahead of time.
Yeah.
Just in case you didn't know that.
Yeah. That's how the...
That's why you said that.
Yeah. But tomorrow is the... Fringe started today, but some people have their first show tomorrow, and we are talking to one of those geniuses now.
Ah, yes. Thank you. Fringe starts officially Wednesday, and then my first show Thursday at 6 p.m., so... that's my kickoff.
What's your show?
It's titled Entry Level Bob, because it's after me, Bob Banks. It's a almost stand-up, but it's mic-less, right? So it's storytelling, and I find the difference is, like, it's still funny, but I get to use both hands. So I tend to tell stories with big gestures and my whole body, and I much prefer it. I find that when I'm doing stand-up, I always kind of want to use the arm that I have to hold the mic with, and so... Yeah, you either have to leave the mic in the stand, which always looks unprofessional, or you basically give up one storytelling arm to hold it in place. And so this is just nice. This is going to be great. It's going to be comedy, storytelling. The other part, of course, difference between maybe stand-up and storytelling is that all storytelling should... No, I guess it's not all meant to be true, but in my version... that's the difference. There's no embellishing in this 45-minute show. Like, as outrageous as it gets, like, this is all true facts to things that happened to me. And so basic premise is just, as a comedian for almost 25 years now, because that's kind of an on and off thing, I keep getting a job, I keep having to give that job up to do some comedy thing, and then I keep having to get another job. And so over 25 years, I've had a lot of entry-level jobs, not a lot of management or secondary jobs, and I definitely am not a professional other than comedian. I didn't go to school for anything. So I have actually worked in a lot of different fields, hospitality, construction, you know, some of them are eluding me right now, but a lot of them, family care, things like that. And so I find that a lot of people have couple of small jobs and then they get their career and they're locked in, and so it is kind of a unique perspective to have, you know, 20 or 30 different starter jobs and what that meant. And, you know, a starter job when you're 16 feels different than when you're 30, feels much different than when you're 42, and so just all of the perspective that comes from that.
So you didn't go to when you said school, it just made me think, like, I guess there is no school for comedy. Like, do people go to school for that? I've never thought about that before.
Well, yes and no. Like, there's definitely training facilities, like places that'll take your money. but there's also the Humber Comedy College in Ontario. Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know about that.
It's a 2-year program. The second year's, you know, like, really great. The first year, both years are great. But so... there's hesitation in my voice when I said that. It's because I've been around that program for basically since a couple years after it was created, and I saw it go from not really knowing what it was doing to growing into what it is now. And so, like, at first, it was good, not great. And now it's great. And now it also has a lot of homegrown talent that has returned to, like, sharpen the next generation. So it might have felt a little cheesy 20 years ago, but now it is like a cutting-edge comedy school.
Wow.
Like most schools, though, like, you know, like, there's not a lot of Doogie Howsers. You don't become instantly famous. So, you know, we're still waiting for those grads that are going to make Humber Comedy College, like, the place to go, but... they are peppered in a lot of writing rooms already and a lot of places all over North America. But yeah.
So you're saying about, like, storytelling is harder when you don't have both hands?
For me, because I'm very passionate. So I'll be throwing my arms around. I want to describe something. You know, I want to describe the size of it. I want to... the height. Sometimes I want to, you know... mimic it being in a wheelchair, or like, just there's just something where it's like you can kind of do it with one hand, but with two hands it's instantly visually there. And so
what kind of a room are you in where you don't have to use a microphone?
I'm luckily in the Son of Warehouse Venue 5. It's a 100-person venue, the smallest available. And I even asked, like, do I need a microphone, and they were like, no, this is an intimate space, it's nicely elevated, small box room. My other main concern was that it used to be sweaty, and now it is an air-conditioned room. And I went in and, yeah, like, the entire Fringe is air-conditioned, but there were still rumors that maybe some of them weren't as cold as others. But I stopped by, and nope, I have a nice ice box, which so is, yeah.
If you need a place to cool down, go to Sun and Warehouse tomorrow at 6.
Yeah, yeah. And just comedy lives in the cold, so yeah. It's so much better. I've done shows in that old, sweaty environment, and you know, you're dripping and uncomfortable, and the audience is dripping and uncomfortable, and no thank you. So,
do you have to shout more?
Projection, but not shout. And there is only one or two jokes I have where I do shout, so usually I have to pull the microphone away from my face.
Yeah, yeah.
So this time I'll just have to, like, turn my head and shout more off stage than at the crowd. But yeah.
I guess that's a whole thing, too, with, like, stage training for people in plays, like, knowing how to project without ruining your voice, basically.
Yeah, one thing that's interesting is I've gone to sports games with other theater comedians, and they're much better hecklers because they can actually carry their heckle to the player. Like, not if you're in the 500s, of course, or the nosebleeds.
Proper breath support.
But yeah, like, I've been sitting in the front row with a theater friend where they were, and always theater heckles are different, right? So we were looking at a guy, all the other guys on the team had blue socks, the one guy had bright orange socks. My friend just yelled, "Hey dude, nice socks." But, you know, he's 100 yards away from us, and we literally see him look down at his socks and kind of, you know, sheepishly kick them aside. And you're like, yeah, that's why we're theater students. You can hear what we say, you know? Like,
it probably sounded more like, "Nice socks! Ha, 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 yeah, ha, yeah. ha." Right from the belly.
That was good projection.
That was good, yeah.
Didn't peak.
Nice socks, red leather, yellow leather, red leather, other theater warm-up games.
So the mic stand thing, that always bothers me. Because, like, most because comedians, they, like, they grab the microphone, and it's not like, and I get it, it gives you freedom of motion. Except most comedians don't move around anyway. Why not just keep the mic stand? Because I get so much criticism every time I leave a mic stand there. I'm pretty much sure that, I'm pretty sure that's why they hate me as, like, a guitar playing one. And it's 100% because the mic doesn't move.
Well, so, like, I was going to say, guitar-playing ones are allowed to have that. Anyone else, it's just an unwritten rule that you are hiding. You're physically hiding behind the mic stand. You're using it as a crutch. You're leaning on it. You're playing with it. But by taking the microphone out and putting the stand away from you, you're not fidgeting with it. It's a confidence thing that other professional comics are looking for. But that doesn't mean it's a must, right? Like, Emo Phillips stands behind the mic in the stand the whole time, but his bit is that he's kind of hiding behind it. So that's where it might be giving the wrong impression.
I think it's important in any art form not to get hung up on those things if the thing is actually good.
Exactly, right? So it's called stand-up, and then Marc Maron comes out with a stool and sits down the whole time. It's like he's doing exactly the opposite of the title of what the show is called. But he's still...
it's not called sit down. Ha, 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 ha.
Exactly. But he's going to sit there the whole time and tell unbelievable stories. And he might even cry for a minute. And it's going to make it more poignant that he's sitting there than if he was standing there. So, like, his art form's elevated by his choice. So I agree. I agree. Like,
everyone knows he just has a bad knee.
The old football injury. Drives
him. You know, he's got a great relationship with his father, but his knees are shot. Yeah. So that's what drives him.
Yeah.
I don't know anything. Yeah. So let's take a break. Occasionally we have to play music. We are the two princes, or sorry, we are the three kings on CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg, Manitoba.
I'm Chris.
I'm Micah.
I'm Bob.
We'll be back.
Always count on me. I'll be home. you and see you through. I'll be home, I'll be home, I'll be home.
We're back.
Wait, you miss us? We missed you. It feels like it's been forever. More than 7 seconds, for sure. And, yeah, we're back with Bob. Talking about stuff and comedy and all the good things. Bob also is the host of a summer series at XQ's, which is my favorite place. I used to be in love with the staff there. Still am, in many ways. I'm just the older male staff now. Sal's the greatest. But yeah, tell us about the summer series, because that thing, I've got to play it once, and I've been watching it many times, and it's just the coolest show there is in this town.
Yeah, well, thank you. Yeah, summer series, I met another comedian here, Dewey Parker, and he had 9 years experience in comedy outside of the city, and I had about, 15, 20 outside of the city. And so both of us have been working on stuff that didn't really translate to anybody here knowing who we were, but we had a lot of experience. So we decided to team up and put on shows kind of as a resume to let people know how hard we work and what we do. Not just how funny we are, but like from the ground up. So like you said, we were at XQ's. I noticed that they had a beautiful patio space that wasn't really being utilized. So we went in with our own contractor, we built a stage, we totally renovated the space, cleaned it up. They have beautiful vines and gorgeous greenery that's growing all around it, so it was a really ripe spot. Like, we didn't have to do too much, but now that it's shined up, it's a really great environment. And yeah, our shows, we try to keep it to just one or two of the pro comics on their night off coming out to play. We have games, which are kind of fun and exciting, unique ways for people to win money, but there's no pressure on the audience to ever be embarrassed or to be like vulnerable. It's on us to be embarrassed and vulnerable. You just get to look like a king and win something, right? So just a little unique in that way. It's not just, here's another comic for 8 minutes, here's another comic for 8 minutes, thank you, good night.
Sorry, you're not allowed to refer to anything as king outside of this room.
Okay, all right. There are no other kings, I get it.
Yeah. Thank you.
But yeah, so just the idea that it flows a little faster. It has a whole unique theme. The night that you played, we were kickoff to summer. Just this last week, we had cruise night. And so there's just little themes that add a tinge of fun to the games and to the overall party.
By cruise night, are you referring to cars or the homosexual community?
Well... there was some confusion, but it was between Tom Cruise night and cruise night, like Sunday.
Okay.
But yeah, we didn't even think about the gay community, which is a flaw.
Yeah, nobody thinks about the gay community these days.
They always sneak up on you. I mean, I was thinking about Tom Cruise, so I was thinking about gay community adjacent. Yeah. But yeah, my plan was that when my partner showed up in, like, rough and tumble Vin Diesel-like gear, I was going to show up looking like Tom Cruise from Mission Impossible 2, but...
too tall.
Yeah, and it's already kind of been done, so I couldn't think of another good Tom Cruise to do that hasn't been parodied, so he's just been made fun of by everybody already, so not a lot of fresh Tom Cruise material there.
Yeah. Yeah, he does it himself.
Yeah. Yeah, he already has looped and become a parody of himself.
Yeah.
That's how you know he made it, and he's so much better than all of us.
Yeah.
Good old Tom, boy.
I like how he has one front tooth. Have you seen that?
No.
There's, like, people have drawn, like lines on his face.
Yeah.
And, yeah, his one front tooth just lines up perfectly.
Oh. So Nick Jonas got his other one.
Why, does Nick Jonas only have one?
He has three.
Three front teeth.
He has three front teeth.
Wait, doesn't that just mean one? Aren't the other two just hanging out near the one?
But they're all front teeth. They're all the big square ones.
Oh, okay. So they're like front teeth sized, not one is the front.
Right up at the front, though.
Hands off Nick Jonas, okay? He's my...
I'm sorry. I know how much he's my everything. Nick Jonas. It's just a shame he doesn't call you anymore. What happened with you guys?
I don't want to talk about it.
That's fair.
So if Tom Cruise only has one, does that mean the other two next to it are just like normal teeth? I don't know. Sorry,
I
just...
I think so. Are they big too?
I don't know.
Is he part of the three? Is he part of the three front teeth one? And we're all just saying we're minimizing his other two teeth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we get for some reason.
Sorry,
I guess,
Tom Cruise. I didn't mean to minimize anything about you. You can do that yourself.
His parents did that.
Because oh yeah.
The poor little guy.
Because he's really short.
He's really short.
Let's get that out of the way.
Let's get it out. Yeah.
Yeah, but on this show, that's it. He doesn't get a nickname.
No. No nickname for Shorty McFly there.
Oh.
That's my...
Jim Koenig.
Sorry, I gave him a name, even though we're just studying...
Had you ever thought about, like, wearing a necklace that has the mic stand attached to it?
Like me? No. I have not thought of that. I did think about doing, like, the head mic.
Oh, that's so lame, though. Oh, that's the worst.
Exactly. It's like the Bluetooth.
You automatically turn into Tony Robbins.
Yeah, you are now a youth pastor.
Yeah. No, 100%. That's what I mean. It's not an easy fix. So that's why I'm glad I have a small venue. Previously, I've done The Fringe a decade ago, and I had one of the 300-person venues. Yeah, and so you get like 80 people in there, and it still feels empty. So hopefully this time around, 80 people will be there anyway. Mm-hmm. It'll feel much more full.
All perspective.
Yeah.
Unless you're wearing a head mic, then it's just that.
Yeah.
Have you gentlemen talked about the, like 10 years ago, the Mayo Enema show?
Oh, we have not talked
No,
about
I've never
it.
Heard of that.
He's never heard of it.
Oh, okay. This is one of those things that I have trauma from, because the last time I was here to do The Fringe, it was like 2013, and I brought two professional friend comedians who I had to convince, you know, on their own dime to come here, and we all spent, you know, some significant money to come here for 2 weeks and to do the show, and we thought we were really bringing a show that, you know, we'd worked on pro comics for a while. Like, this is some good art. And then... we got 3 stars, which is a death sentence, right? You're just, like, boring. And so that's fine. It happened to us. But one of the other shows that got a 1 star, and this is a legendary show, I'm not talking out of circles here or anything, was a show where a gentleman on stage gave himself a mayo enema and then returned the mayo back to the bucket in front of everybody. I did not see said show. I have heard of said show. And that show sold out. And so every night that we were at the beer tent talking about how, like, we'd had kind of another small turnout, everyone was talking about this sellout show and that this gentleman had started to die. He's still alive. It did not die. But because every night that the Mayo went in, it started to come out bloodier and bloodier until the Fringe stepped in and told him he could no longer do that trick during his show. And so... you know, art has its place, and I can't say what one man's art is and isn't, but it's really heartbreaking when you've scripted and worked and rehearsed and all of these things, something, and then somebody else is just kind of hurting themselves in a goofy way, and it's taking all of the wind out of the room. And so, yeah, like, I had a bit of a bitter feeling towards... the festival as a whole, because it felt like, I don't know, it was an anomaly, you know?
Are you still okay with mayonnaise, though?
Yes.
Because it's one of my favorite things.
I don't mean to ruin a condiment for anybody.
Yeah, it is a whole food. You know?
Yeah.
But, yeah.
No, I get that. But do you think maybe sometimes, like, it's clearly a gimmick, but maybe sometimes it goes, the gimmick is so crazy that it goes beyond a mere gimmick and it actually is something?
Because he had to think to do that.
Yeah, I just... Again, one man's art, and I shouldn't really complain, but, you know, they were heralding the fact that it was the most tickets ever sold in Fringe history, and all the shows had sold out, and this guy's having a 6 out of 8 sold-out run, and so everybody's just Scrooge McDuck dancing in the money pit. And we're standing outside wondering why we weren't invited in. And that makes me sound bitter. I'm not bitter towards anything other than that one mayonnaise.
Well, I get that. Yeah, it's also like, I thought of something and then I didn't remember what it was.
He's like the Royal Canoe of Fringe Festival.
Yeah.
But yeah, the Fringe Festival, one of the things I do love about it is
savory cannoli.
Savory cannoli.
One of the things I do love about it is that everything can be weird, right? Like, you know, there's an awesome show this year that's just one lady retelling of the Nightmare Before Christmas, and like, that stuff's going to be really funny. That's the kind of fringe of the Fringe Festival.
Yeah, fringe.
Yeah, there should be something you go in that's a little weird. When I was a kid, I watched somebody do the entire retelling of Star Wars, but with the Simpsons voices. Very crude animations just put up on a projector.
Love that.
And yeah, like, you know, that's what you should do on a cold or like a hot summer day. Like, sneak into a cold room, watch somebody experiment in a weird part of theater, and go back to your day. But yeah, I had to choose what rating to give my show, like mild language, coarse language, and it's weird because you're like, what's the difference? What's the difference between mildly offensive and coarse level offensive? Right?
Yeah.
I don't know. It's not. I don't think it's as easy as you think. Like, I don't know.
It's hard. Yeah. Why do you have to choose that?
Well, it just asks you what you would rate from your script. Like, is this coarse language, mild language, whatever? And so I picked mild language because I was like, I'm not going to say a lot of F-bombs. But then now I'm thinking about material-wise, like, maybe talking about genitalia and stuff like that is more coarse than mild. Like, I don't know. I don't know. We'll find out.
I always find that medium salsa does the trick. Do you have an equivalent of that rating? Like, is there a middle one?
So there are kind of three, because there's the people who picked mild language like I did in a PG, mild language with an R, and then coarse language with an R, or coarse language. Like, they gave you too much control.
I think coarse language is for those people who just, like, drop way too many superfluous, vulgarities where it's not even, like, necessary. It just, like, sort of stands out like a sore thumb.
Well, and there's always, like, some World War II show where, you know, Nazis are saying incredibly offensive stuff. So I understand, like, you have to know where the line is and what you're drawing.
So did you give yourself mild language with him? You gave yourself mild language PG, or?
I gave myself mild language PG, but okay. In my defense, I do not talk about Hitler at all.
Oh, yeah.
So.
Well, there you go.
Yeah. One of the first Fringe shows I saw when I was, like, 17... It involved some booby and a lot of Hitler talk. But it was memorable because I was 17 and it was live booby. It's like, what's happening here? I don't know.
Sounds great.
Yeah, very eye-opening theater when you're a kid. You're like, what?
Boobies for Hitler.
God. Yeah.
Damn it. Why does that have to happen to me? Like, it's just so easy for my consciousness to be seared with negative things. And now every time I see boobs, which hopefully it will be sooner than later. I'm going to think about Hitler.
Oh, I'm sorry.
You ruined it for me.
It'll be fun to think of it, to see it.
I don't know which I ruined.
Das Boobies!
Das Boobies.
Okay, yeah, I was just trying to figure out which I ruined for you. Did I ruin boobies or did I ruin Hitler? Like, I'm sorry.
You'll never know.
You can just start drawing mustaches between them.
Yeah. I'll have to find an adventurous...
I'm sure you will soon. Hopefully sooner rather than later.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. We are the two princes. Or sorry, we are the three kings.
On CKW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg, Manitoba. I'm Chris.
I'm Micah.
I'm Bob.
And we'll be back.
Just right. let's ride.
Souls to sleep in the hush of morning's glow. I rest not, I cannot, I just go.
The rest, my muse, for its focus I depend. Nose dive into the ocean to danger a ship and transcend this world.
I got a bowl of my nose.
Want to throw me... Oh, you got one. I was going to get sauced up with a nose-blowing device, but I got it. I got it.
Oh, you got it?
I got it.
Cool.
I'm not even going to blow it. I'm just going to put it against my nose for comfort.
Well, how much time? Keep talking, boys.
We are checking to see how much time there is. We know there is still time.
Oh, way more than half yet.
We are back with Bob. We got lots of time to talk, and we hope you have lots of time to listen.
Yeah. So you did, Chris, you did our show.
Yeah.
You did it first night.
Yeah.
Did you enjoy it?
Loved it.
Yeah. We're an outside show. Yeah. Were there any interesting differences between an indoor show and an outdoor show?
Well, outdoor shows are fun because you don't know who could be possibly listening outside of your intended audience.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, like I got to expose a child to the information of the length of my member.
Yeah, we have.
There was a kid walking by when you were talking.
No, they were sitting in. They were staring out their window.
Yeah, it is a patio.
It's in a bunch of backyards.
Oh.
Well, it's a patio in between a bunch of backyards. Luckily, all owned by the same person.
Yeah,
but there was children.
There were teen children. They were like,
oh, were they teens?
They were like 10 to 12 year olds.
Oh, okay.
Oh, then
I thought they were like 5.
Yeah. No.
Okay,
that's it. They're the okay. South Park, Rick and Morty generation. Yeah. They thought whatever you said was amazing. You didn't expose them to anything.
No, I made sure to keep.
It's just funny because they went from watching the show when you were up to trying to spray us. With hose water or something, but I guess they didn't have very strong water pressure because they could not reach us.
Oh.
Yeah, their attempts were short.
Does it ever happen in comedy where, like, the person on stage almost becomes the butt of the joke and then the audience thinks that they can just be mean to them, but it's okay because the comedian is just the butt of the joke and... Like, not that it's okay, but the audience thinks it's okay to just be mean and, like, you know what I mean?
I do. I kind of, like, I think that's the heckler's dream. That, like, the heckler's gonna say the thing that wins the crowd over, and then the person on stage is like, oh, you win. And I have actually, I have seen it work before. Like hecklers win. But it's not good. I say the most comedy is, like a plane, and the person on the microphone is the pilot. And so when they lose confidence, the room crashes, right? And so, like, maybe a heckler can stand up and take over, but even they're going to take over for maybe 2 minutes. Like, if the pilot loses control, you're going to crash. The evening's done. Like, you really don't want the comic to lose control like that.
You just let the heckler take over and see how good it goes for them.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Why don't you get up here?
And that's it's a worse though when they then do it and then they
then they're amazing and then they
then
become
they absolutely destroy and then they think they can do comedy.
Yeah, because I've seen people's crowd work go like that where they're asking the crowd some questions and then the person in the crowd starts to get a bigger laugh than what they were kind of intending, and yeah, it's not good.
Yeah.
You don't want to like jokingly hand the controls of the plane over to someone else, and then the ride gets a lot smoother.
That's why they always pick, like, the most vanilla person when they're doing crowd work.
They don't actually want you to talk back. My least favorite crowd work are those questions that don't have a real answer. Like, they're like, what kind of lawnmower do you use? And you're like, John Deere. They're like, yeah, my lawnmower doesn't work sometimes. Like, my answer didn't affect your joke. That's not crowd work. You can't go home and check that off on your list as, like, I did it. You didn't. Because there's a lot of comedians that hide their crowd work in that. Does anybody have a mom? Cool. Here's a story between me and my mom. It's like, no, that's not.
Or like a leading crowd work question.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Crowd work as a segue.
Exactly. And they really do pat themselves on the back, and you're like, that's not it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, I think about this a lot, like aesthetics, like the idea of the thing. It has to have substance to it. Just because you've done crowd work doesn't mean it's good. It has, like, it's just a way to be, it's a way to use your comedy.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I've seen some of the, like, heavy hitters in the country go up and just do crowd work. Like, they never get to their material. And that's why they're the heavy hitters in the country. It's because, like, they can just juggle that, you know, talking to a couple in the front row, then talking to somebody about their job, then talking to someone else about their kid, and then they walk off and they're like, oh, I never even got to a joke.
Maybe they didn't have any material that night.
Sure. But they just had everybody eating out of their hands anyway. And it's like, yeah, that's why you're, you know, you know, like the host of the debaters or what have you. Like, these people have...
That guy's really annoying.
Okay.
Just his voice.
Okay, well, yeah. Like,
I know his voice.
On the show, the debaters, maybe. But when you see him in real comedy circles, he just can crush. He can crush with nothing. And I think that's what's better. It's like when you're actually funny, crowd work is just you chatting with somebody. It's not stunted, or you're not setting yourself up. You're just actually funny and having a conversation.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. Yeah, it always feels weird when you can tell either the comic's nervous or that they're up to something.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you see it with bands, too, like stage banter.
Yeah.
Like, people have stock things that they're supposed to say. If you don't have anything good to say, you should just play the songs.
Yeah.
I feel the same way. Sometimes I feel like they're just chatting for chatting's sake, and you can just feel their nerves. Then they go back in the song, and they're rock stars again. Like, why did you expose yourself?
Yeah, yeah.
Just look cool and hit the song.
I get so mad at my drummer and Homer, because he always has the same, like, awful street jokes. Just terrible jokes. They're not good. They're not good jokes. And he tells them all, and, like, we rarely have it to the point where our guitar player is not tuning in between songs, and because he respects the audience too much or something. But, so every, like, one time he didn't even need to tune. We were ready to go, and the drummer's like, tells his stupid jokes. I can't say them because you don't want to hear them. But it's so frustrating because it's like, don't. Shut up.
Yeah.
And I don't want to feel like it's like, let me do the talking, because, but, like, let me do the talking. Or come up with something besides these awful jokes.
You should have a... Does he sing in some of the songs?
He does.
Yes. Yeah. You should have a timer on his microphone.
Yeah.
Or like a pocket mute.
That'd be nice.
Yeah. Just tell him, hey, we got this wicked new wireless system. It's going to make you sound so much better. And then you're in control of when it's actually on.
And I'll just keep it off and I'll sing his songs, but I'll learn how to do his voice.
Yeah.
Because then he'll never really... know that he wasn't singing, even.
Yeah.
My assumption is he doesn't listen to the show, then.
No, I don't know. If he hears it, I don't think he does. Nobody listens to the show. Which is great. But yeah, no, I would put money on him not listening to it.
Fair, fair.
But if you are listening, Curtis, stop talking. Or at least stop telling those jokes.
I shouldn't have ragged on that guy. I just think his voice is annoying. I'm sure he's great. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Hey, I get it. I get it. I have comics or even other performers that drive me nuts. One of them that drives me nuts is Lin-Manuel Miranda.
Right.
And I think that, you know, all the great success with Hamilton write a million Disney movies. Like, I want him to be rich and famous and enjoy all of it, but I cannot, for some reason, also partake in it, right? Like, it's like he's cilantro and he just tastes like soap to me. Like, I cannot get on the side where people like him.
Right.
I don't want him to lose a dollar. I don't want him to disappear from anything, but I can't. I can't.
Yeah, I think it's something that I try to remember with everything. And I have a history of just not employing this at all. But something I'm really trying to remember, because it actually makes my life easier, is to just say the simple phrase, it's not for me.
Yeah, it's not for me. And, like, I know that because, like, enough people go effing crazy for Hamilton, yeah. Right? Like, they're singing the song, they're dancing, they're like, can you believe it? And then there was just one other comic that said, like, it's a musical about history. I couldn't imagine something that would make me more want to kill myself. And I was like, you're right. And every time I hear one of the songs, and it's like, you know, like, it's the start of history, and we're gonna... I'm like, nope. Hard no. And so, I'm so glad that other people love it. I do, but...
It's just not for you,
man. Not for me.
That's fair.
But yeah, so I get it. Steve Patterson, took me a little bit to remember his name, but...
Stephen Pete.
He's very funny, and so, like, some people who, you know, don't like that CBC... charm that he has to put on too, sometimes get the wrong impression of him, and I can get that, because, like, you do have to be a little bit polished,
right,
on the CBC. So then the second, you know, you're playing the late night show with him and he can undo a couple buttons, have a scotch in his hand or whatever, I don't know, and just shoot from the hip, he's the funniest guy in the room.
Cool.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's true of most comics.
Yeah.
If you've seen them on TV, whatever number you would rate them, they get it about two or three more numbers if they were in the room, right? Like, you see Howie Mandel, and however you feel about Howie Mandel, if you're like, oh, he's like a five or six through the television, well, then he's going to be an eight or so in person. And that always makes me feel like the people who are lucky enough to see, like, Jim Carrey or Bill Murray or, like a real... A person that makes you, like, gut laugh when they're at their full tilt. It's like, imagine seeing that. Like, imagine seeing Jim Carrey live. Like, I know some people have, but I haven't. And I can imagine that in that room, he's burning so bright that it must be intense. Maybe not now. Maybe he's a little bit more retired. But you know what I'm talking about. Like, back in the day.
Of course.
When he actually unleashed that shit and stuff.
That's okay.
In person, it must have been... wild. Or like Chris Farley or something like that. Like,
oh yeah,
Chris Farley smashing through a table right in front of you, like, would have, yeah,
it's so great too how much respect you gain for these people when you actually do the thing and realize that it takes so much work.
Well, also, I have friends that I see in real life, like, oh my gosh, this person's so funny, they're a 13 out of 10, like, they never mistake, everything they do is hilarious. And then they're given a chance to do a television show as a guest, and it's boring. It's a 4. They're standing there nervous. The shirt's too tight. Like, they can't relax. Everything that makes them funny live is not coming through the TV. And then that's what a bigger market gets to see, right?
Yeah.
So I have tons of friends who, once they've gotten to that next level, it just doesn't really take... But it doesn't taste like what they taste like in real life. Like, it's so manufactured and put through some kind of boring formula. But also just, you know, the medium of going through TV or recording, it just doesn't have the same energy, like music either, yeah. Right? Like a live band, the same song you listen to all the time, all of a sudden you're crying. And anyway... It is respect, and I respect people because I myself, I've been on a television show, and you're watching yourself being like, why does anybody find me funny? But that's not a good representation of what you do. You're scared, and you're trapped in some studio instead of, like, in front of a live studio audience, which would be the best. But yeah. But you guys get it. Like, if you're playing music... alone versus playing music in front of 50 people, like, it just feels so different.
He nailed our collective audience.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
50 people.
Yeah.
Well, that was great, man. We're gonna pause for another song. Do you have any music you want to hear?
What are we going from?
Like, it doesn't matter. Anything. We play everything.
Okay, yeah. If you're allowed to play it, the Magnificent Seven's "This Town."
Excellent.
Done.
They're great, and we need to play Winnipeg stuff too. So
yeah.
Okay, we're the Three Kings on formerly known as, and then formerly known as, and what's the thing for the future? And at some point in the future to be known as the Two Princes on CKW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg, Manitoba.
I'm Chris.
I'm Mike.
I'm Bob.
Perfectly timed thing you did there, because it felt like that was sort of the wave cresting, and now we can just, I mean, we can keep talking,
yeah,
but like now we can, it feels like the cool down period. Is that a thing in comedy? Like, is there a cool down period, or do you just go until it's over?
I think it's how you want. Some people like that big finish. I was just talking about this with the Fringe show guys. Like, do they want me to have like a solid one word ending where they cut the light and everybody knows it's over, or do they want me to just call it when I feel it? And with my show, like, it will have the kind of same last line every time, but when I decide to pull that out, might change by a couple minutes.
Cool.
And so, yeah, it was a nice conversation to have with the tech that, like, I'll just do it, you know, like, I'll end it when I feel it. But, yeah, I don't know. It is kind of, like, we talked about aesthetic, right? It's personal choice and also what works.
I find sometimes with comedy, mostly with the stuff I see on TV, like, And it goes back to what you're saying about it's not the same. Like, there's so much pressure. You're on, like, Just for Laughs or something. You get, what, mm-hmm. like, 2 minutes or something?
Yeah.
And then these comedians, like, they build up, and then they just, all of a sudden, it's over. And it feels like a little... I find often with comics on TV, it ends too abruptly. But again, it probably comes down to the fact that there's so much pressure and it's not what they're used to and much time.
And then the sellability of it, right? Like, you know, if it's for the Comedy Network, they want to have your 6 minute joke and then another 3 minute joke before they go back to commercial break. So they really are like, yeah, they want them bite sized and, it is just different on the different market. Luckily right now with YouTube and the internet, a lot more smaller comics are just putting their own specials out. And so it doesn't have that corporate masters feeling of like, oh, is Pepsi okay with this joke? Is, you know, like, you don't have to make sure that there's all these guys and ladies in white suits or suits just sitting around being like, is this okay? It's like, no, you just record your jokes. You put them out on YouTube. Maybe people find you, maybe they don't. And so a lot more comics are finding success that way. And I think that, like you said, it doesn't have that abrupt ending. And it also doesn't have to necessarily be as clean or, like clean, maybe just offensive words, but also clean, like, in subject matter. Like, maybe somebody is talking about the hardest part of their period or what have you. But just on TV, they'd be like, oh, maybe you don't use this word, maybe you don't use that word. Well, on the internet, you use all the words. And so comics are just a little freer than they used to be.
That's awesome. I think sometimes I like the idea that, like, real pros can work within limitations and adapt.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's something to be said for that too.
100%. Like what you're saying with like coarse language being a thing, it's really funny how quickly once the festival, like the stand-up festival guidelines come out and it's like, oh, we just need 5 clean minutes, that almost all the comics are like, well, I don't have that. And it's like, well, why not, right? Like, if you just need a couple words to get you through 5 minutes, then that's a bad thing, right? Like, it's a crutch. It's a crutch to have to swear 4 or 5 times in 5 minutes just to get through your story. Like, then it's not as funny as you want it to be. And so you're right, like, it's great. I also really like that shows now will be themed, like the ones at the Comedy Festival. So it will be like breakups and stuff. And so you are challenged as a comedian to write jokes, new, fresher jokes for the theme. And so you don't just go in with like some old, stale one you've been cooking for 5 years. You're like, yeah, here's some new stuff. And here's relevant to my life today. And yeah.
That's great. What do you have to say?
I don't know, I'm just so emotional. No, I yawned. Just because I'm...
You yawned?
I woke up at 5 a.m. It's not anything about the show. But yeah, I lost myself in a little yawn.
What's that?
I don't know.
Got my my braces full of sand. When all I ever wanted to do was hold on to your hand. I lost you once, I never had a second chance. Would you have changed your mind with a second set you free instead of keeping you for myself. Guess it'll always be the same, and it might be just as well. Let you think I feel you're sick. I've already smashed that shell.
We got another 15 minutes.
Nice. Here. Let's talk for 15 minutes.
Yeah.
So you said you're on a show? On a TV show?
Yeah. For a heartbeat there. So CMT, which used to be Country Music Television.
Yeah, baby.
Slowly it became CMT. So it's country only in kind of feel. It's much more cabin television now. And there isn't any music anymore. So slowly they replaced everything with reruns. So they had reruns of like Last Man Standing and other sitcoms like that. And they were playing, they probably still are, but they were playing America's Funniest Home Videos. And so they just wanted a new show to kind of sandwich up against that and just fill in some more time. You already have kids and having dinner, watching this in the background. Let's just make it longer. And so we created a show called Almost Genius, which actually it ran for a year here, but it ran for a couple years on True TV in America. So if you Google it, there will be a lot of footage, but it will be comics from America and not necessarily the show I was a part of. But so we just took viral video, like, oh, it's a viral video of somebody dropping a canoe down the stairs. And then they just superimposed our faces on the people in the video. And we would add a little bit of dialogue, often making it a little safer, right? Like, so if somebody was actually hurt in a video, we would take that out and just add...
You call that a royal canoe?
Yeah, exactly. and just, you know, like, if somebody dropped something on their foot and screamed, we would have them drop on their foot, and then their face would turn into a cat, and it would, like, meow. And so it was just safer. Violence, safer. And anyway, interestingly, the network hated it and was like, we don't ever want to show it. We're going to play it at, like, 2:30 in the morning on the last day possible because we just need our tax benefit. And so it, yeah, it became, like, just kind of well known for being, like, a big, big mistake. But then this is how Canadian TV works. They started playing it once they were in emergency and they needed some time filler, and the audience response was great.
Yeah.
And so they continued to play it for 5 years on heavy rotation, sometimes up to 4 or 5 times a day. But because it's, you know, one season of non-union work, we don't make any more money, and we never made another season. So just like 5 years of seeing it on TV every single day and still having Chorus Entertainment, the company, being like, your show is an abomination. It's like, okay, but you keep playing it. You've sure made a lot of money off of it, you know? Like, not a lot of money. They didn't get yacht money, but, yeah, you know, they're still getting a lot of rerun money off of a show that's been bought and paid for. But yeah, just a couple of stories like that, too, along the way. I wrote for Disney in a Disney XD sketch comedy show for children. It did not get picked up, but it was the most expensive pilot in children's show history up until that point in Canadian history.
What was it called?
This isn't a time to forget. Try it. You know, kind of like the motto for kids. Like, you want to do this? Try it. You want to do that? Try it. You know? It was supposed to be like live action. Like live sketch, similar to like a Saturday Night Live, but it wasn't going to be live. It was just going to be filmed as if it was. So, you know, like an open theater, similar to the Muppet Show, where you see the transition from one sketch to another, and then you also see some behind the scenes stuff. And so it was fun and interesting, just it didn't get picked up. Cost $250,000.
So they really believed in this one.
Well, they really believed in it. And because it was filmed in this, like, live theater way, the only way we could afford to do it was by filming 3 episodes in one. So to film the pilot, we actually had to write 3 full episodes and film in this giant mega format. And so that's why it was so expensive. It was $250,000 because we filmed 3 episodes. But still, 3 episodes that were eventually just flushed down the toilet and you couldn't even find one good pilot out of. I'm making myself sound like an amazing writer-actor here, but it's just how the business is, right? You hand in scripts, then somebody else changes them a little, and someone else changes them a little more, and now they're not funny, and now you're filming them, and you're like, what happened?
Yeah, I've experienced that, man. Like, people who... Like, if in my experience in the music industry, like, you know, they're like, you guys are great, but you need to try this. You need to work with this person. Mm-hmm. You need to work with this person. And it's like, what happened? You were great. Yeah. We listened to you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we added the flavors that people were asking for, and now it doesn't taste like what it was. Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. But those are all experiences that you can get something from, I think.
Exactly. That's how, like, I'm trying to keep the show that I'm doing at The Fringe from getting bitter. Because, you know, like, some people, these opportunities are springboards. They make it to the next level, and sometimes the springboard breaks, and you're just kind of on the same level you were already on or below. And, it's just how the cookie crumbles, you know, like, if you really believe in the system, it could still elevate you at any moment.
And bitterness is great as long as you're not taking yourself too seriously.
Yeah, or you have, like, an art in which to pour that, right?
Yeah.
Like, some bitter comics are the funniest comics I know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they're not going up there and saying these bitter things, thinking that everybody needs to really, really love exactly what they're saying, I guess. I don't know.
No, you're right. Like, it's like I find that Jerry Seinfeld is one of the most bitter comics ever, but when you're watching him, he's always smiling and he's always delivering it with a smile, but it's like, yeah, that's, he's like seething with rage just below the surface, and he's bringing this to you because he thinks everything's stupid, right? Like, when you actually think about it, you're like, wow, Seinfeld thinks everything is stupid, and he's just good at being like, oh, that's dumb, and then explaining it in like a light way. But I'm sure if you actually lived inside his brain, you'd be like, man, everything's dumb. Like, everything sucks. Nothing lives up to the hype. But yeah, so I don't mean to trash talk. I just think that's what makes him so good, is that there's like this bitter rage that he's figured out how to,
yeah,
to sell,
how to use it,
rather than just be bitter with it, you know? Larry David, of course. I'm just describing the comedy duo, but
yeah.
Finding out how to turn that bitterness into bitter aid.
Is that a Gatorade?
Yeah.
Cool. I like that. Let's take one more break and then finish her up. What are the three kings on CKW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg, Manitoba?
I'm Chris.
I'm Mike.
I'm Bob.
Fiction.
All right, we're back. You've been listening to the Two Princes, a.k.a. now today the Three Kings, because we have our guest Bob here. And we're on CKUW. So it's been a really good episode, I think, from my perspective. Who knows how the audience will take it. What audience, thank you. That's kind of what I was thinking about before, though. It's like you never really know until something is... I'm not comparing our show to anything. This is just people talking. But, you know, some people like it, I guess. Anyways, you never really know how a thing is perceived until you just let it get out there. Like your late night show that people just loved. It was like a cult hit, it sounds like. But
well, that's it. And I've even watched it with, like, kids and stuff, and they totally bought into it and they get it. So I feel like we were making a show for kids, and then some adults in a room said, well, I don't like it. And I go, yeah, well, did you show it to kids? Like, mm-hmm. What are you talking about? You didn't like it. And so I do find that, like, you know, the industry, even though we've heard these stories for our entire lives, the industry doesn't seem to learn the lesson that there should be fewer cooks to a project, where, you know, one singular vision should kind of help be carried to the end. There still is the need for everybody to add their change. And I've only seen one or two projects make it through that and stay positive.
But it should always be about nurturing the art, as opposed to, I'm the executive, so you have to change something because I need to have a stamp on this.
That's exactly it, right? That's exactly what everybody feels. They feel that the executive didn't even really have a good idea. They just needed to have a idea.
Yeah, yeah.
And so there's those tricks that other writers have said where you write like a purposely offensive joke that might get cut, or you write a really bad character so that you just give them something to like act.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, but you have to be smart enough to do that, because if the executive's like, well, I really like this character, and you're like, oh no.
Well, they probably are going to end up liking that character.
Exactly. So you're like, I don't want to put in a dumb character just so they act it. That'll be it'll end up being Urkel from Family Matters, and it'll be the show you're writing for 6 years.
Yeah.
Although, there's worse things than accidentally creating Family Matters.
Yeah. Yeah, that's why I like Rick Rubin. I mean, he just doesn't even... He said his ultimate goal is to not even have to be in the room when the music is being... when the record's being made.
That's cool.
Like, I could say that my album was produced by Rick Rubin.
He wouldn't deny it.
Yeah.
Yeah, you should do it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But no, like, seriously, like, I think that's what a really great... Like, this is talking about, like, a producer now, like, for music, but it's kind of... All this stuff relates, I think. It's like,
yeah,
a really great producer should just create an environment where the band is able to be their best as, somebody paying for the show that they asked to be written, as opposed to, I'm the king of this studio, I need to have my say here. Some people manage to push through that, and that's cool.
No, like, in the one show, like, you're hitting it right on the head, is... 10 of us brought together because we were kind of the funniest people at this local live spot, and they wanted to have kind of the best fresh minds, but then it really was just this senior comedian being like, aren't my ideas still really good? And we were like, no, they aren't. And he was like, you're wrong. And it's like, okay, great. Like, you brought 10 of us together to just listen to your ideas and tell us how brilliant they are, and they weren't. And he has, like, good shows. He has good money. He's doing all right. But he just really wanted the validation of 10 younger comedians telling him he still had it. And he didn't. And then Disney learned that lesson to, like, $250,000. Like, anyway, you're right.
Well, in a situation like that, there's really nothing you can do.
No, yeah. Just ride it out.
Just write Jar Jar Binks, maybe.
Yeah. I wrote a character in that show that I then took for myself and used in another show, and it went very well. So, you know, there's always some hidden joy. There's always something you can take.
Yeah. I always think it's good to have high standards and zero expectations.
What about you, Chris?
I have high expectations and zero standards, so that's why we work so well.
Hmm.
Yeah, we meet somewhere in the middle.
Yeah. No, I'm a broken human, so that's my thing.
And but you own it.
I own it, yes.
And that's what we know.
And I believe that everyone is broken, and so that makes me not special and them not special. And that's a message that everyone needs to know. If you're listening, you are not special.
For real.
I say it every week. Someday you'll hear it. When they accidentally tuned 95.9 FM some night.
They're going to hear, you're not special, and then they're like, ah, oh, that was just the fuel I needed, and then drive off a cliff.
Exactly. If I could inspire the next generation to simultaneously jump off a cliff, sorry, drive off a cliff.
I mean, that's a big impact in the world.
It would help the population.
At this point in your life, you'll take anything you can get.
Yeah, man. Sometimes it's better to be infamous.
I mean, you're working with me for fuck's sake.
It's best. Oh, and you're worried about our swear pool.
I would say the hardest part of driving off the cliff is that we live in the prairies.
Yeah.
Just go to St. Boniface.
Yeah, the roads are broken.
Oh, you gotta find a cliff. Gotta go into a gravel pit.
Oh, man. That's not a Peugeot. Get out of St. Boniface. That didn't make any sense. That's a bike. Cool. I think there should be more jokes about the Tour de France.
Yes.
That's a very funny thing.
Yeah. Well.
Do you ever get people coming up to you that be like, hey, you know it's a funny thing? You should do a thing about bricklaying.
No, you know what's crazier, though, is that there's like a certain age of gentlemen that's like definitely decided that it's too late for them to try, but they really want to corner you and tell you how they could have.
Yeah.
And so after after the bigger, more professional shows I've had, there's just been one gentleman who's grabbed me by the shoulder, pulled me over to the side, and told me their entire life story as to why they're not up there with me. And I'm trying to be so nice in those moments because it's a very long story, and it's always kind of sad. And then they always tell you a joke or two that's not funny, and you're like, that's why you're not up there with me. It's not because of that sad thing. Yeah. Like, anyway.
But you were able to be there and listen to them, and for one moment you know they were able to express something that they needed to express,
and they felt heard and understood.
So that's cool.
It is cool. It's just it happens a lot more than I expected. And you know, it is what it is. It's so nice to just chat with people after shows anyway. Like, I don't want to come off as I'm complaining.
Yeah, but sometimes it's nice to not have to have that conversation every time. And for like 25 minutes. And you can't escape them.
Yeah.
And then they talk about how this generation, the kids are all on their iPads. And how annoying that is. And it's like, oh, buddy, like, I don't care.
Back in my day, we had a Tom Agunis.
Oh, man, Tom Agunis's were great.
Yeah, we just... listening to some of these guys tell me about how it could have been. Mm-hmm. I had one guy in New York, and he had that thick New York accent, like, you know, full on Brooklyn, and he talked to me for almost 40 minutes about like how it could have been, and I was like, you know what, he had a funny enough cadence that I was like, it still could be, buddy, like, don't give up on that dream yet.
Yeah.
But yeah, anyway,
it's almost sad that I saw the Slackers at Bulldog a few months ago.
Okay.
And like, they're I loved them when I was like 20. They were a great ska band.
Yeah.
Slackers.
But yeah. Now they're like, they're all like, they were older back then. They're like 35, 40 then. So they're like 60 now. Yeah. Their audience is all 40-year-olds now, because they're all people who liked it 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. So I got to see these 60-year-old people play music for 40-year-old people. And it was just like the saddest thing, because like
you lost 20 years of your life.
I lost 20 years of my life in that one moment where it was just like, you know, it was for them, but it isn't anymore. But their guy had the greatest Brooklyn accent.
But was everybody happy
about it?
Was everybody happy to be there?
I don't know. I wasn't. I was feeling my whole life just. Like, I was becoming a thinner or whatever. I don't think that's the right movie. But I felt like I was wasting away. I felt like I looked at the picture of Dorian Gray. And I'd consider myself Dorian Gray because I'm beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All facts.
Yeah.
Well, I think we have to leave it there.
You're welcome.
That was a big finish.
At the beautiful Dorian Gray.
Beautiful Dorian Gray.
And there's Red Room.
Well, you want to take it away?
All right. We're the Two Princes on CKW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg, Manitoba. I'm Chris.
I'm Micah.
And I've been Bob.
Yeah, the Three Kings.
The Three Kings of Life. We'll catch you next time.
And we may be Bobless, but if you can find a calculator, whatever. Bye.